Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to episode 20 of the official Geek Speak podcast. I'm your host, Sean. And joined as always, it's my co-host, badass content creator, Josh Rudy Rudolph. This is the podcast where we watch movies, make movies, play games, and more. What else can you ask for?
Ah! Hi!
Anyway, welcome new listeners, if you're here. I'm glad you're here if you are. If you're a return listener, also welcome. Thanks for being here. Woo! So, what this show is about is my co-host Josh and I talk about geeky and nerdy pop culture and news and fun topics of movies and TV shows, etc. We also go through a different Disney Channel original movie, or DCOM for short, every episode or every few episodes or ever, and we'll see how in a short period of time the biggest media company on Earth caters towards solely children with a large sample size, and we'll see any quality changes, etc. And our first episode ever was a little over a year ago, back in mid-May, and it was about our first films we ever made. We're both filmmakers. And now this episode will be about our senior films, now that we've graduated from college last month. Do you now remember me telling you about this topic?
I do remember now.
Good! Anyway! This time, though, for our DCOM, we weren't doing one.
What? I was totally not informed of this, wink wink, until about 5 minutes ago.
There's none this time around, and I'll explain why near the end of the episode, and so stick around to find out why. So, we did have news, though. Wait, before we get to that, did you watch anything good recently?
Oh, boy. I have been watching things. Barry, the HBO show, just wrapped up its third season. Easily one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen.
Really?
It's phenomenal. Bill Hader, as a director, has really grown, and he does an incredible job. And, of course, acting and writing-wise, he's fantastic, but directing, he really proved himself. Stranger Things, Season 4, Volume 1, I think we've already talked about that. The Boys, oh, we did?
That's what I was going to bring up this episode as well for what I watched recently, because I didn't watch anything else besides Stranger Things recently.
Well, Volume 1 of Stranger Things Season 4 is very good. I'm excited to see how it ends.
Yeah.
I started The Boys Season 3, that's, again, as fantastic as the first two seasons. But other than that, I've been very busy working. I've been wanting to watch, like, the new Adam Sandler drama on Netflix, same as there's a new one from the director of Top Gun. Hustle. It's a basketball movie.
But not Hustlers. That's a different movie.
That's a different one. That's about Jennifer Lopez. If they were together, that'd be a bit different.
And Cardi B.
Oh, yeah, she was in that.
Yeah.
For, like, two scenes.
Yeah. So I watched the first episode of Ms. Marvel.
Miss Marvel, I forgot about that. It's so good. I love it.
It's very fun. It's great. Good times. I also am caught up on Stranger Things now, and I'm obsessed with it. I've already made two TikToks about it. I have six more of my drafts. So I'm making now TikToks every day again, Josh. Crazy.
Nice. I've been meaning to start doing YouTube stuff. I have so many scripts and stuff written for reviews and other things. I've just been so busy with work. Every time I come home, I'm just dead and have no energy to do anything, and I hate it.
And that's why I'm forcing myself to do creative stuff. I'm going on creative walks, even if it's like at 1 a.m., just get my head going again. Then I come back and just write some stuff down, whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I need to write scripts. I haven't done that in a while.
Stranger Things, I had so many thoughts. I can discuss with you off-air, because I have a lot of thoughts I want to talk to you about. That's good shows. Good TV is fun.
Yes, it is.
Woo! Also, since the last recorded, we last recorded May 30th, so it's been about 2 weeks.
that way, huh?
Yeah, that's correct. Last recorded May 30th, Josh. It's been 2 weeks.
That's so weird. My brain has just been in work mode this whole time, and I'm just like, nothing makes sense anymore.
You thought it's been a few days, pretty much. It's like, oh,
I thought it's been maybe like a week or so.
Nope. It's been 18 days now, I guess, 17 days. But anyway, it'll be consistent episodes. So every week or two, probably closer to 2 weeks, we'll have a new episode out. Woo!
Whoa.
And Josh, you've been working a lot, you said. I have like 2 or 3 job interviews this week, so we'll see what happens there.
Nice. I just had a job interview and sort of callback thing where I got to do a thing, and if I do it right, then I'll get the job.
Since we're talking about films that we made this episode, I'm also going to bring up the fact that I have another script written, a first draft. I'm writing 2 more drafts this next week, and I already have a producer, a cinematographer, a script supervisor, and an AD.
Very, very nice.
You want to be on another set, Josh?
If I can find the time, sure.
It'll be one day.
Ah.
News happened.
It did?
More things kept going while you were at work.
Ah, weird.
I know. Some movies got released, like Top Gun 2, Top Gun Maverick, Jurassic World Dominion, and this weekend we got Lightyear.
I've seen all of them.
Fun. I've seen none of them yet. I'm seeing Top Gun Maverick and Jurassic World Dominion this week, though. I'm going to watch Top Gun 1 first. I'm going to watch Jurassic World 2 first. Because I've seen Jurassic World 1 already.
I can already tell you, one of them is a good film, and one of them is Jurassic World.
I've seen everyone's reviews for both already. Fascinating. Just fascinating. And Lightyear seems fun.
Lightyear, I saw that last night. It is a lot of fun. It's not like, you know, one of Pixar's greatest movies of all time, but I really enjoyed it.
Also, soon we're getting more movies, Josh.
We are?
In the next week, we're getting Marcel the Shell. In the next week, we're getting Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. What a tongue
cool.
twister. Yeah. And we're getting The Black Phone as well, the Ethan Hawke horror movie.
Ooh.
I'm really excited for Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. What a title to say 10 times fast.
It seems like such an interesting movie for A24 to release, but I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Well, have you ever watched the YouTube series?
I have not. I learned about it was a YouTube series after the trailer released.
Oh, it's like 2005 YouTube, like we're beginning of YouTube stuff. So much fun. Boo or woo to movie releases. To Top Gun 2. Before you had saw it, what was your thought? Boo or woo?
That was a definite woo. Even before, I was just like, that looks cool. I'm going woo in the theater.
Before you saw Jurassic World Dominion, do you expect to have boos or woos?
Given the track record of one good film out of a whole series that spans over 30 years, I'm going with a boo on that one.
Lightyear, before you saw it, did you expect to see a boo or woo?
I suspected a woo.
Was it a woo?
It was.
Woo! That's not much enthusiasm, though.
Woo.
That's better. Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. I keep saying that title. Boo or woo, Josh?
I'll give it a woo. It looks charming.
And The Black Phone.
Oh, this is always so tough for me when it comes to horror movies.
I'm going to give it a huge woo. It looks really fun.
I'm going to give it a woo just because of Scott Derrickson, especially after rewatching Doctor Strange.
I think all of those, I'll give at least a mini woo to all of those. Not like a Comic-Con level woo, but like, you know, someone's performing some fun music outside of the street and you like, they toss a few coins and bucks and stuff. Like, you know, woo! Good job. Got to that level of woo.
Nice.
The music doesn't suck level of woo. You know, fun things. And on to more news. Something we didn't talk about last time that we should have talked about because it came out. The news of this happened right before we recorded, so we didn't talk about it, which is dumb. But we had the trailer for Multiverses.
The
game looks really... It's a Warner Brothers game. I was talking about before in the past episodes, like when Bueller was on. It's the point of the game is it's a Smash Bros. Style video game, and it'll be completely free to play, which is awesome. And it'll be characters like Arya Stark, Shaggy Roger from Scooby-Doo, Batman and Superman, and...
Ted Lasso.
Yeah, that's what it gets to. He's one of the leaked DLCs. as well as Godzilla, the leaked DLC.
I'm just happy Warner Brothers knows how insane this idea is and is just running full speed with it, and they're not slowing down. I'm glad they're doing that.
Give us Tony Soprano.
I thought that he was already confirmed.
It was never confirmed. It was a rumor at the time.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if he's confirmed. at least they're giving it a T rating, so that way, like, kids don't immediately be like, oh, this is a fun game with Superman and Bugs Bunny.
So, yay or nay on Multiverse's trailer?
I'll give it a yay. They confirmed, what's that version of Shaggy called?
Ultra Instinct?
Yes, Ultra Instinct Shaggy. They confirmed that, so I'm fine with that.
It's just Super Saiyan Shaggy from, like, Dragon Ball. But yeah, it looks fun. I think we've always consistently given this game a yay on all news about it so far. I'm sticking to that. I like Smash Bros. I like these characters. It seems kind of fun. On to a bit more somber news, Josh.
Oh, no.
This news actually comes from CNN, but it's about something you would enjoy. It's CNN.
Ted Lasso
is officially going to end after 3 seasons, the writers say.
There's the part of me that is happy that the creators know how long they want the show to go on for. And then there's the fan of me that wants 20 more seasons of it because it's just so gosh darn delightful.
Brett Goldstein, who plays Roy Kent in the show, is fantastic. He's also like one of the main writers in the show.
Uh-huh.
He confirmed by saying when he asked about the 3-season rumor, he said, yeah, we are writing it like that. It was planned as 3. Spoiler alert, everyone dies. That part was a joke. But like, unless everyone does die, that'd be horrific.
I would be so confused.
Ted Lasso should never die. He's amazing. So, nay to this, because it's sad. I think it... I'm glad it has a limited run. I think 4 or 5 seasons could have worked.
Yeah.
I also think that it could have ended after 1 season. Still been charming. So, any and all Ted Lasso is good to me.
I know you've seen the first season. Have you seen the second season yet?
I've seen most of season 2.
Okay, where'd you leave off? I'm curious.
The one before the beard episode.
Oh, so like the big game episode?
Yeah.
Oh, man. The beard episode is different, but I like it. But man, that episode before the beard, oh, that broke me.
I didn't care. It's like, I think it was my least favorite episode so far, actually.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts.
I guess, small spoiler alert for that episode beforehand. The reason why is I don't like the idea of Rebecca and Sam together.
You see,
It's really creepy to me. He's 21, she's in her 40s or 50s. That's inherently creepy to me, no matter what. That's not okay.
With how it plays out in the season, I think it's interesting. And that's all I'm going to say on it.
That's just where I am right now. We'll see what happens. Spoiler for Ted Lasso is over. Don't worry, guys. There's timestamps down below. There always are. You could always... Or like on Spotify, there's like the hit next button, and I'll skip forward 15 seconds. You could just keep doing that. You can skip past all of us. Just give us the watch time, the listen time. But nay on the 3-season, it's ending? Or yay?
It's a fun nay.
Nay.
I want Ted. Yeah.
I want more Ted.
Yeah.
So, on to hilarious news.
Oh, goody.
We all got morbed. So, it was Morbin time. It's no longer Morbin time. Morbius, the Living Vampire, the film, released in theaters again. And bombed in theaters again.
I worked that opening weekend again, and it was hilarious to see it show up and have no one there for like the Friday night. Then like the Saturday, I think we had like 15 people, but you could tell that they were all there to laugh at it.
So on the Friday night showing of Morbius on the re-release, it averaged $85 a theater.
Which is hilarious.
That's so bad. They went so much money.
Because not only do you have to pay the theaters to show the movie, you also had to put in the money for marketing for the movie again. And like,
it was already paid 7 times in the first place. So they already lost money beforehand anyway. Oh my god. They didn't understand that memes online were shit posts, and they thought it was like encouraging. Like, we're laughing with it. No, we're laughing at it, actually.
Which is so... my favorite one of those was that came out after the re-release when it bombed. They were like, no, guys, we were all busy this weekend. You gotta release it again next weekend.
Anyway.
But if there's a good thing that comes from this, we will most likely not get a Morbius sequel after this.
Watch Morbius be in the Sinister Six movie still.
Oh, dear God.
Or in Venom 3.
I don't want either of those things to happen. I want Venom 3 to happen. I don't want Morbius to show up in either of them.
So yay or nay on it, on the re-release as a news piece?
I'll give it a yay because it's hilarious.
Yay because they're wasting money on a vampire boy.
A bad vampire boy at that.
He's so bad at being a vampire. And yay because it means Matt Smith was in theaters again.
Poor Matt Smith.
I love that. I looked up the lyrics of that song that he's when he's dancing in it.
It's so funny.
It's like, and poop your pants when the lines.
Was that what he was actually dancing to on set? Or was that like just a joke that the editor was just like, this is a bad movie. I'm going to throw this in here. Why not? And see what happens.
On set, when you have someone dancing a song, you have a tempo and a metronome going. So they know the beat to dance to. And they find a song that matches that in post that they can get rights to.
Makes sense.
But anyway, moving on to other superhero news, Josh. Guardians 3 is a movie. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
It is.
We got two new confirmed casting. From Deadline and Variety, we learned that Daniela Melchior, who was just working with James Gunn on The Suicide Squad, she played Ratcatcher 2, is now an undisclosed role in Guardians 3. Love it.
I'm very curious to see what that'll be like.
Love it. She was fantastic in The Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah.
And Maria Bakalova is also in Guardians 3 now.
That's right. I'm so excited. She's fantastic in Borat, too.
Oh, okay. I have not seen her anything yet.
Just watch Borat, too. She's hilarious in that. She's so good.
All right. But cool. On this, overall, yay. I've never had a problem with any of Gunn's casting. So, yay.
It's so funny to think back, like, when Guardians was first announced. I was just like, I know Zoe Saldana from Avatar. I don't know who the rest of these people are, except for Vin Diesel, who's playing a tree that says three words. What is this movie going to be? And, like, now I have full faith in him.
Now, Deadline also reported that Neve Campbell is not coming back for Scream 6. It's screaming time.
You see, this is weird news, because I feel like Scream 5 was, like, the right place to end it for her character to be there, same as like Courtney Cox and David Arquette. Like, it feels weird that they would come back for a sequel, for like another one after this one.
See, I think Scream works best when it is about her character.
But like six times that this has happened to her, at this point it kind of becomes hilarious, and not in a good way.
Evil dies tonight, Josh.
Okay, like that's a whole different thing right there.
Fucking the basketball guy from Stranger Things, the exact same vibes as Evil Dead. It's the same character.
That is like my one complaint of the season is that guy. But now that you made me think of that, I'm like, nah, that just makes it way better.
It's hilarious. Hawkins and turning Hawkins into the same town from Michael Myers Halloween.
Except there's no one this time for them to actually chase.
Right. Also, I guess very vague spoilers for Stranger Things. You can skip ahead like 15 seconds or whatever. Okay. He never said what he saw on the boat. To the town hall. He said, there's satanic stuff happening. Everyone, get behind me and go march with me. What?
Yes. Us adults follow this 17-year-old into the march.
Into the unknown. Anyway, Neve Campbell. Coming back for Scream 6. I'm giving a nay, solely because it's her franchise. If you're gonna keep doing the Scream stuff, I think tying it in her character is important.
Or, I mean, I'm weird in this spot, because, like, I feel like that it could have ended with Scream 5.
Oh, I think it should, like, as well.
But, like, I don't hate the idea of possibly exploring different ideas of things to satirize, but, like, I'm in a weird place. I'm gonna give it an indifferent nay. That's where I'm gonna go on this.
Pick a specific reason to nitpick in this news piece, and then give it a yay or nay based on that. Like the fact that there are six screams, give that a yay or nay.
I'll give that a nay. Look, man,
I flip flop and it's fine.
It's fine. It doesn't matter.
Black Adam. You know, oh, yeah. The hierarchy of power is about to change.
Oh dear God.
So the Black Adam trailer came out. I liked everything in it besides Black Adam.
I was so underwhelmed while watching it. I was just like, so this is what people say when they're feeling fatigue from this kind of stuff. This is the prime example of that kind of stuff. To me, it's just like, it's there. That's about all my thoughts are on it.
Well, I think that, you know, the guy.
Dwayne Johnson?
No. Bond.
Pierce Brosnan?
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan. I love that he's playing Kent Nelson. It makes me happy.
I've got no problem. Like, the cast of the film, like, for the most part, I don't have a problem with.
Noah Centineo as Atom Smasher.
I will say this here now. I will give him the benefit of the doubt, and I want to see him do good. And you know, if he does bad, I never promised his performance would be good. I just said I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Sure. I love Hawkman, I love. He was great in Invisible Man.
Yeah, that's a good casting choice.
So, and I love Kent Nelson / Dr. Fate. Such a great character. I'm very curious to see how that goes. Like, I love the Justice Society angle. But this movie, I don't care about.
It's the biggest problem for me, which was my biggest fear of it, was that just like Dwayne Johnson's all of his other movies, he's not playing an actual bad guy. He's playing an anti-hero. Which, if Shazam... That wasn't words. If Shazam... If Shazam 3 wasn't going to be a film of him versus Black Adam, then I wouldn't have as big of a problem with this. But since, you know, it's going to be a problem now because he's not an actual villain, so why would he fight another hero? That doesn't make any sense.
I'm giving this an A for the same reason I gave the costume reveal an A. He doesn't have the pointy ears. He doesn't have the weird widow's peak hair. That's why. Give him the hair and the ears, then we're all square. Okay, DC?
I will give him I'll give it a nay because I'm going to be hearing the hierarchy of power is about to change forever for the next several months, and I can't take it already.
It's like the Morbius trailer. Moving on, the extended cut of No Way Home coming to theater soon.
Oh yeah,
it's called Spider-Man No Way Home: The Way More Fun Version.
I hope this isn't another Endgame re-release.
Sorry, Spider-Man No Way Home: The More Fun Stuff Version. It is a long title of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 words.
Too
many words on a billboard.
I hope it's actually like a lot or a decent amount of additional stuff added in, because like the Far From Home re-release had like one or two additional things added, and that was it, and it added maybe like 30 seconds of screen time. I hope that this actually adds a significant amount. I don't know what it could be, but like I'll go see it in the theaters again.
And then there's the Endgame release, which is Unfinished Hulk.
Yeah, I saw that in theaters. That was like the last time I saw it in theaters. I was just like, oh, so they weren't kidding. This is the only thing that they added.
I'm giving it an A, not because I don't want to see this film, but solely because the name is too long. That's why.
I'll give it a yay because I like long titles.
You betrayed me. You are now my enemy.
When we had Everything Everywhere All at Once again, I had some people come up to ask for tickets. They had absolutely no idea what the movie was called. They were like, every place, where, thing, I don't know, whatever that movie's called.
For the first time in almost a year, Josh, full circle moment. In our first few episodes, we talked a lot about J.J. Abrams and a lot about Knives Out 2. We are back with Knives Out 2 news. Now, Abrams, give us some news to talk about again. Knives Out 2 had a lot of news, like a lot of casting and stuff. Now we have a title. The Glass Onion, a Knives Out story.
I'm fine with this. It doesn't bother me.
You know, it's got layers. Onions have layers. And if you peel like layers because it's made of glass, it might all shatter. What a cool metaphor, Josh!
I'm very excited for this. I really hope Netflix, you know, listens to everyone and releases it in theaters.
So, but because we had a rule beforehand about Knives Out 2 news, that whenever, like a year ago, whenever it came up, we always had to give it an A. Remember why, Josh?
Because of Netflix?
Yeah, because it doesn't go into theaters. That rule still applies. We have an automatic nay in place for all Knives Out 2 news, even if we're happy with the news, because it's not going to theaters. So
I'll give it an A.
But Glass Onion's a very fun title.
Yes.
And we get to see more Benoit Blanc, KFC, Sherlock Holmes. Ready for very odd news?
Sure.
So a movie that you talked about once on a show called From the Cinema was called The Joker, Crime Stopping Man. And now we're getting The Joker 2, Crime Stops, Not For Him. That's not what it's called. It's just called Joker 2. I don't speak French at all. It's got a French part of the name.
So, there's a translation to it, I just don't know what it is.
So, the official statement from The Hollywood Reporter is that Lady Gaga is in early talks to opposite Joaquin Phoenix as Harley Quinn. The rumor, this is also not confirmed, but the rumor is that it's going to be a musical.
Dear God, I hope this is true. Because, like, to go so far in a direction not a single person expected is such a insane decision, but one I desperately want to see just because it will make all the dude bros mad.
Now, I guess slight spoilers for Joker 1, but where the movie ended, he was in like a mental health ward, like an asylum kind of place. So, what this could be is Lady Gaga is, if she's Harley, is the helper there, and they just do the story of Mad Love, which is when they fall in love, but as a musical. That'd be fun.
I mean, his mind has already deteriorated so much. Like, this wouldn't be a stretch.
No, it'd be so much fun, I think. And
I think the only issue they would run into is how do they keep the tone in line with the first film?
Don't. Just don't.
Make it a fun musical?
Yes.
Oh boy, that's a risk.
Do a complete 180. Make it a jukebox musical.
Oh my god. She has to sing some of her own songs.
And have him sing some Johnny Cash songs because he was in Ring of Fire.
I'm so curious if he actually did his own singing or if that was like pre-recorded.
Make him sing.
I want Joaquin's reaction to this. He's just like, I'm doing a what in the Joker sequel? With whom?
Also, Joker has sung before in numerous mediums. He's sung in the Killing Joke comic and in the movie. He has sung in Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, whatever it's one during the credits part.
It's actually Arkham Knight. There's a moment with it.
Yeah, it was also one in one of the credits where it sings the whole time, I think, too. But he's known to enjoy some tunes.
He's known to enjoy a tune or two.
Yeah, he likes the melodies. So he can sing also really creepy or really fun and bombastic, and he's done both. That's fun. I'm giving this a hard yay. I like nonsensical musical fun. And give it to Joker.
I'm giving it a yay because it's going to piss all the dude bros off. No one's going to know how to react to the movie. It's going to be pure chaos. I can't wait. But Todd Phillips, if you come out and say it's not going to be a musical, I'm going to be so mad.
I mean, it's fine in a way. It's just funny one way.
It's just, no one would ever expect this. And I want more superhero movies to do that.
Well, I have more superhero news, Josh.
You do?
Dustin Lin. After leaving Fast X, is now going to make a live-action version of famous anime One Punch Man. You've seen the first episode of One Punch Man.
That is an insane show from the one episode, but I would be very curious to see what he could do with it.
Don't whitewash it, please. I have seen most of the first season, I think. I think I have an episode or two left. It's very fun. I love it. It's so good. Every episode is fantastic. I just stopped because I got busy. I'm going to go ahead and finish it eventually. Very fun. He does action really well, right? From Fast franchise?
Oh, he's fantastic at directing action. He's a director that changed Fast and Furious from being, you know, just driving cars down the street to actually being what it's known for today. He does action very well.
I mean, James Wan also did a good job with that stuff.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm saying Justin Lin was the one that started it. And then, you know, James Wan built on it, F. Gary Gray built on it, and then Justin Lin came back for F9 right. and continued building on it.
So, okay. Can he do comedy well?
I think that the Fast Furious films are funny, both intentionally and not intentionally, but that's just more a script kind of thing. I think that he can make funny moments happen very
Could
consistently.
Could he take seriously the idea of a half-giant crab man, half-Tidy Whitey's baby legs?
I don't think he would have taken the job wouldn't accept the insanity of it.
This is a yay. It seems fun. The fact that we're getting a live action One Punch Man is just fun in general.
I'm gonna give it a yay, but I'm gonna be worried because a lot of live action anime adaptations have not been the best
give
from what I've heard.
I'm kidding. I'm very much kidding.
I'm gonna say a no to that one, Chief.
But I do have Avatar news coming soon. Don't worry. Yeah, Josh, guess what?
What?
I'm going to give you some sad superhero news.
Oh, great.
And by sad, I mean really happy! Spider-Verse castings!
How dare you lie to me?
You like Into the Spider-Verse, right?
I'm a fan.
Ready for the sequels?
Yes.
We've gotten the casting now for three characters. The Vulture, Captain George Stacy, as well as the Spot. We got...
Spot.
What, you think that's funny? That's funny, mister.
I don't know. We'll find out.
We'll find out. The Spot is going to be apparently the main villain in this movie. And he'll be played by Jason Schwartzman.
Okay, that's an instant yes.
If you don't know who that is, watch Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. He's fantastic. You can hear it in his voice in that movie, in his live-action performance, quite a bit of range already. The Spot is a character whose entire body is made up of interdimensional portals.
Okay, I know who this is.
Basically, he's a fully white form, with a bunch of little holes, and you punch the hole, and your arm will go out a different direction in his body. And he can throw spots as well, like how Polka Dot Man throws his polka dots. Cool?
Cool.
Yay on that casting?
Sure.
So then we got two other casting, like I said. We got George Stacy, played by Jorma Taccone as a Vulture, and Shea Wingham as George Stacy. I don't know who either of those people are. But
Jorma is part of the Lonely Island.
Oh my god. As the Vulture? Hell yes.
And then who's the other guy?
Shea Wingham.
Oh, he's been in so many things. He's Kong Skull Island, Joker, he's done a lot.
I'll probably recognize his face. Oh, yeah, he's great. Cool. I'm happy with this. All the casting. I also trusted the casting for the first film, so why I doubt the casting for the second one? Yay on Spider-Verse stuff?
Yay.
Now, Josh, we getting some Avatar stuff. Avatar news I have, Josh, is really, really cool. Want to know what it is?
Sure.
Three new Avatar The Last Airbender animated films are in the works right now at Avatar Studios.
Is this part of the one that they already announced like a couple months ago or however long ago that was?
We do not know fully. We just know that there are three animated Avatar films in the works, officially.
I hope that at least one of them is a Korra movie.
One, I think, the rumor is right now we have one Kyoshi movie coming.
Ooh.
And I'm fine with any of that. I'm fine with just hearing more from Brian Konietzko and Michael DiMartino in their wonderful world of Avatar. Yep.
Cool.
Yay. Lastly, yay. Josh, we got our first look at Ryan Gosling playing Ken in Barbie. I am so happy with it.
This movie, man.
He has like the orange spray tan. It's fantastic. He looks like a Ken doll. That six pack on there. Denim vest jacket.
He's made the return of his bleach blonde hair from his early 90s era.
Also, all the denim he's wearing is like acid wash bright, like light blue. The seem to have a small reference to Back to the Future, where they called Marty Calvin Klein because his underwear name and their branding. His branding on his underwear in this is Ken, like, and his name is Ken. So that's fun. We also have two more Ken with Kuti Gatwa and with Simu Liu. So that's pretty cool.
I can't wait.
I'm so excited for this. We are both very excited. And we are both adult men.
That's it's going to be great.
That's our news.
Crazy.
Overall, it's not been a bad news time. Rudy, the badass motherfucker.
That is me.
Guess what we did this year?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm kind of just here. I'm vibing.
Well, this is a problem.
Anyway, podcast over. No, we made films. We made numerous films, but we're going to, and one of them for me releases publicly by the time that this goes out. So look up on YouTube Co-op 2022 short film, and you can find one of my films I made this year. That's pretty cool. It releases tomorrow as we're recording this, but it'll already be out then.
Yeah.
And then we made senior films, which is what we're going to talk about here. The experience of writing it and coming up with the ideas and like pre-production and post-production, as well as the actual process of being on set, etc.
The challenges one faces.
The death we found in the woods. No, I'm kidding.
Yes, we found many bodies.
So many, it is fields of them in Josh's prom film. Where I played a high schooler.
Yeah.
Take that, Finn Wolfhard. I also can play high schooler still. We made some films.
Yes.
So Josh, run us through Just Breathe. We are now college graduates who both graduated from film school with a degree in film and video studies with a concentration in directing. And out of that, we got films. We got actual finished short films.
Yeah.
So Josh, break down Just Breathe, your film. Talk about it.
Okay, so the story is two high schoolers that like each other want to ask each other to prom, but they, because of their anxieties and fears, they don't know how to. So they seek the help of their imaginary friends to figure out how to say what they want to say to each other. And their imaginary friends are kind of like the personification of their thoughts and feelings and anxieties and stuff like that. The idea originally did not start out as a romantic comedy. When I was starting to come up with the ideas, it started out as much more of a realistic drama. The imaginary friends weren't a part of it, and it was just about the two of them, but because of their anxieties and fears, they weren't ever able to say to each other how they felt. And then I realized everyone else is going to be making either a depressing drama or just an out there experimental film. I want to be nice and like show people a good time and have a good laugh. So I took and...
show people a good time!
Yeah. So I looked at a old script I wrote for a playwriting class that had a similar idea, but that had the imaginary friends aspect to it. I took beats from that, and I started writing and rewriting and rewriting and rewriting it. Eventually, by the end of the semester, I had what I thought was going to be the finished script. And then
last semester, not this semester.
Correct, of last semester. Then this semester started, got a producer, and started looking for a crew and everything. Once I secured my producer, we started looking for locations for the high school. The problem with this is that high schools are surprisingly expensive. And
shockingly so.
It was going to cost us at least $700 for 2 days, and we also need to have insurance that could cover up to $1 million.
$1 million? He's like, I have $5 and a penny.
I literally emailed back the superintendent and said, I'm sorry, this is just not at all within our budget. We are a student film. I was thinking that he, you know, would take pity on us and like would give us some kind of discount. No, he said, okay, I'm sorry to hear that. And that was the end of that. So then with
I get it, because it's a school. But
also... Yeah, and so from that, we couldn't find any high school that was any cheaper, so I had to start rewriting it and figuring out how do I tell the same story, but not set it in a high school. And thankfully, I was able to come up with an idea of being in this kind of mindscape of their heads, of them and the imaginary friend, because that was also something I was having a lot of trouble with, was figuring out how do I show them talking to their imaginary friends, but they're still in the real world.
But before we get to that, let's talk about a bit... the actual development process, because we did this for class, for our senior film class. And so, like, we got to pitch out just random ideas to the room first and see what people gravitate towards. Josh, what were the two ideas you pitched out to the room?
So, I pitched out this film, and then the other one I pitched out was a zombie apocalypse film about kids during the zombie apocalypse trying to make a movie. Yes, for my TV writing class this semester, I changed it up, took the base idea of that, and have stretched
no spoilers,
it out. No spoilers, obviously. But I think the way that I've changed it and adapted it, I think can make for an interesting show.
Nice. And so we did that. We pitched the room these general ideas, see if people liked or didn't like. And if we wanted to change that again, we could, but it can make things harder to keep changing our ideas. And then we had to write a script, get feedback on it, give feedback to other people, take notes, write in our draft, process, repeat that again, like, 3 times, pretty much. And then we had to make a lookbook, which is like a pitch deck kind of thing, of references to different imagery and vibes and setting and location and people to give a good scope of what our film will feel like. And then we also had to make a digital pitch video to submit to a panel of judges, and then we'll maybe get to pitch to some judges to get a grant for our film. And that's pretty much how the first semester ended. Right, Josh?
Yep.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Is there anything in your first draft you wish you could have done?
Oh, God. There was a joke in there. I love this joke. So back before the imaginary friends were only in the mindscape, as I like to call it, they would appear in the real world. And so like one of them could like pop out of a locker or something like that. It's like big mouth, but not as dirty. And
not
so
it's a little dirty, not as dirty.
Yeah, but like the script was like he was arguing with his imaginary friend Andrew, and then he went away once he saw Sarah, the girl that he likes, and so then he started like freaking out. She's like, oh no, she's coming to me. I can't talk to her. What do I do? And like because he's an idiot, he's just like and then smacks his head against his locker and like falls down to the ground. It's broad humor, but every time I read it, I'm like, God, that's funny. I would have loved to do that.
What's funny is it would have been me acting at doing that to my head.
Eventually, as I was rewriting it, I was just like, okay, the practicality of it and the safety of it, I don't really know how it could go. And I want, you know, my actor to slam their head against the locker many times.
Like, I know how to do it safely as a stunt, so it would be technically considered a stunt. But it would require material I didn't have with me at the time to do.
Yeah.
So that's not worth doing. It also requires minor visual effects work.
Yeah, but if I had the chance to do it in another project, I will definitely do it.
Nice. I will hit my head against any wall for you, Josh. True bromance. So, script-wise, development-wise, you're pretty much happy with how it came together?
Yeah, I honestly think the limitations of not having the school ended up making it a lot better, because the school, I was constantly trying to figure out, okay, how do I make it seem like it's full without having a whole bunch of extras, because the Omicron variant was rampant, and so I didn't want to do, like, you know, a whole bunch of extras and stuff, and so that was causing problems. But having these limitations for at least this script, I was, and working with my brilliant DP, LJ Garcia, we were able to figure out the idea of the mindscape, and it saved the film.
Was there anything from your last film that you took into this one, or did it take?
I'm trying to think.
Tickets, Please, which I was also, so I was in both of Josh's films this year. Not because I was supposed to be.
It wasn't. They were both last minute things, but they were last minute decisions that worked out perfectly.
Josh and I are both filmmakers, but we're also both actors. So we both act and also sometimes their own stuff or sometimes other people's stuff. And it's really fun to do that.
Yeah. But I would say what I learned from the last film is, cinematography wise, really planning it out ahead of time and figuring out exactly what it could look like, because with Tickets, Please, it was more of a mockumentary style, but not everything was as super planned out as I would have liked it to be. Plus, I was also in front of the camera for that film many times, so I couldn't always tell, like, you know, how the framing was. Thankfully, our amazing AD and producer, Kay Kincaid, was great behind the camera and made sure the shots were as good as they could possibly be. I was very happy with that. But I think that if I hadn't acted in it, I think that it could have become stronger. So when Just Breathe came along and I was behind the camera the whole time, it went way smoother from that, of just knowing and playing it out way more than we did on the last one.
I love that Josh played three parts in Tickets, Please, but it was never addressed.
It was never addressed, and it wasn't really supposed to happen that way, but I think it's funny.
Yeah, the cop bit is very funny because of that, actually. The cut back and forth, and it's just different people. Fantastic.
It's great.
Tickets, Please is dumb in the best way possible. I don't mean dumb in, like, it's bad. I mean dumb, and it's broad, funny, stupid humor.
I purposefully made it dumb. That's the thing. As I like to say, I wrote it so I could get the stupid out of my system before my senior film. Because at the time, I wasn't planning on doing a comedy for my senior film. So I was just like, okay, we'll get the stupid out of my system for this, so that way I can focus on more serious stuff. But Just Breathe is a romantic comedy with some serious elements in it. But I think getting the really broad stuff out of my system worked to the betterment of the next film.
So Josh, why the title Just Breathe?
Because you gotta breathe, man. You don't breathe, you die.
That's not why the title is called that.
It's a phrase that's often said throughout the film of the imaginary friends, because the main characters have anxiety of, you know, asking each other to prom. They're thinking like, oh, I'm going to die if I say this. The world's going to implode. The imaginary friends are like, okay, just breathe. Calm down. You're all good. You're not going to die. And that's kind of like the motto throughout the whole film, that, like, even though it's scary, you could still do this and you're not going to die.
Yet.
A lesson I still have yet to learn in the real world, even though I wrote and directed the film.
Good job, Josh.
Thank you.
So, production. Talk about that and being on set and directing actors and all that kind of stuff for you.
So after Tickets, Please, I felt a lot more comfortable with being on set as director and working with my actors. Because on Tickets, Please, on the first day, our AD and producer turned to me and said, so, what do we do? And I was just like, oh, that's right. I have to make the decisions here. Oh, no. And so it was just a learning process throughout that. But once you got to Just Breathe, I was just like, okay, I know what I need. I know what I need for my actors. I know the framing. It's all going to be good. And especially talking with my actors, because you and everyone else were just fantastic and were very easy to work with and knew what I needed. It made the process a whole lot easier for that.
Yay.
We still didn't have locations for a high school, but there's a building on campus that had lockers that eerily looked like a high school. Eerily. So we filmed. Yes.
So creepy.
It's creepy. So we filmed there, and we got all the scenes done in, like, what was it, like, 2-3 hours, something like that? Very fast for that. And it worked out great. The only problem is that there was an open vent that, because there was a leaking happening that we didn't know about, because it was only, like, one drop, and it became way more very fast. And then for the Mindscape section, that was a location we got literally the day before, and it worked out fantastically. It was kind of like this sort of game virtual reality kind of lab thing that we have at school, and there's just this big section that's full of empty space, and so we just used that, and all we did was have the actors stand in like two general same kind of areas, and then move the lights around, and then move the camera around to through like three different positions, and it was just a rinse repeat process throughout that, because I figured simpler was better, because we were killing ourselves over figuring out how to film that section. The day before, I was just like, okay, let's just go simple, this angle, and this angle. We do it for most of it, and that'll be it. That'll work, and it worked so well.
You also didn't touch on yet how it was snowing outside the whole time.
Oh, yes, it was snowing. I was very worried about that. I woke up, I saw snow, I was just like, oh no, what? A couple of our people don't live near here. Yeah. This is a problem.
The crew and cast were not from, like, living on campus, so it could have been really bad for your film, but it worked out fine.
It did, thankfully.
The room that we shot most film in for your film, it was a green screen room. Like, the whole walls were painted green screen, chroma key green. So that was really cool. Like, if you wanted to have the option, you could have used that as well. So you had to have, like, a lot of freedom with your filming, and that was really good for you.
Again, that was another case of the limitations just benefiting us. And we also filmed it all in a day. Usually these kinds of films are done over 2, maybe 3 days, but we powered through, and we got it done in a day. It was like 13 or 14
it
hours, which was...
and a half hours. So it was 2 full work days, but put in one.
Yeah, and I think, again, that was a good thing because we had the people that lived out of town. We didn't know how the snow and ice was going to be for the next day. And so to minimize, you know, the risk, we powered through and got it all done in a day. And it came out so good. I'm so proud of it.
Was the weekend that starting spring break.
That was another reason.
Making people get out earlier was better, for sure.
Yes.
Like, yes, it was 2 full days of work, 2 8-hour days almost of work. But who cares? We had a good time.
Yes, we had a fun time. We had pizza.
Twice.
Yes, because we planned for one meal. We did not plan for a second, but we saw it in the schedule as we were filming. We're just like, we're almost done for the day, and we've only been filming for like 5 hours. Let's see if we can do it all.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Are you happy with how the premiere went for you?
I'm very happy with the premiere, because sitting in a theater full of people, it's just like, oh god, how are they going to react? And it's also a comedy, so it's just like, if they don't laugh, I'm screwed. Thankfully, they laughed, and I'm very happy with that. And I had people come up to me after and during. It was just like, I felt that, man. That was me during high school. I was just like, okay, good. I did something right. Thank goodness.
Yeah, so our school has a film festival every semester, or now every year. And it's basically just a 3 or 4 day event with a bunch of films. We have like Q&A with the directors, etc. And it's like a really cool experience. And we get to see our own work, our own films, on the big screen in a movie theater with a bunch of like full people. And the senior film section had every single seat full and double the amount of people waiting outside trying to get in. Having a completely full theater trying to watch your work feels really interesting and really cool. And are you going to submit to any festivals, Josh, or have you yet?
I need to. I've just been so busy, but I want to be submitting it.
Yeah, we've already missed a lot of deadlines.
I'm aware of this.
I did stuff too, I guess. I don't know. I made a film. It's fine.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Do you like it, Josh?
What, no endings?
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm not saying that just because I worked on it.
Or just because it's me.
Correct.
Yeah, we both worked on, well, yeah, it's squeaky things. Josh and I also both worked on each other's films, and I literally love working with Rudy here because he's fantastic. He was the gaffer, the lead gaffer on my last two films, and I'm so glad. He did such a great job. If you don't know what gaffing is, it's basically working with the lights and helping it get to what the DP or director of photography / cinematographer needs it to look like. And he's
I made a fire where there was no fire.
Are you proud of yourself?
Yes, I was so worried. Every time you showed me like the not finished, non-colored version, I was just like, oh God, I don't see a fire. Oh, I messed up bad. And then I see the version that's color. I'm like, okay, there's a fire there. Okay, that's good. I did good.
But like a lantern light, and I think it comes across pretty well.
Yes, and it was the crackling of the light. That was what I was worried about.
Yeah, we tried doing a fire kind of thing outside once before. Did not work.
Because we didn't know what to do, and so it just looked like my hand was waving in front of the light.
It was a complete pattern of it, too, which is really funny, of doot, 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 doot. What's funny for me, though, is I didn't pitch to the class the film I made.
That is correct. You pitched two very different films.
That I like both the other ideas a lot, too, and it might happen at some point. It was just that I don't know if I can, my head wasn't in it, and that's very important. You need to be passionate about what you're making.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise it will turn out like shit. Like, I excuse my language, I guess, but like, we curse on the show a lot anyway. Josh, you've not cursed today yet.
I haven't?
No.
Oh, well, fuck.
I like what you're about, kid. Yes, so congrats on that part, Josh. So I've worked with Josh as my gaffer twice. He did a great job because we also had limited lighting on my current film, which I'll get into later. But I wrote with someone else in this script. I'll get into that soon. A short thriller kind of film. It's called No Endings, and that's not going to be public for a while, for a few months, because I'm going to submit it to a lot of festivals first, and I'm going to use this film as a proof of concept short film to then go alongside a feature film script and say, hey, here's kind of some of the vibes I'm going with and some of the elements. I have a much better and longer and feature-length version of this kind of same story, and I'm going to use it to pitch to investors and say, hey, I'll make you a good film. That's the general idea of how a proof of concept to work, is it's a proof that the concept can work. I plan on making a lot of feature films and a lot of shows. That's what I want to do. And so I make things with the idea of, can I sell this? Like our last film, Co-op, beforehand, like that's now unavailable, had an idea in my head of, can I sell this? Because I want it to be like an HBO or Netflix show. And I condensed some of the ideas down into one 10-minute short film that I think was pretty strong. And similarly here. I pitched two very different films. One about henchmen of supervillains. And one about custody of a younger sibling. And fighting to keep them in your family.
That's right.
And both were good ideas. And I stand by both of them. I hate that I was in a room of superhero movie haters for one of the ideas, because if I was in a different room of people when I pitched it, it would have been a different response of what people liked more.
I liked it.
Yeah, I was in a room full of film students who are usually pretty pretentious.
Like superhero films.
I'm kind of tired of this. Like, it's a different spin. I have a new idea, something fresh. Not good enough.
It still has superhero typical elements Marvel. To it.
But I pitched those, didn't feel right about it. I submitted a first draft of a script about 2 years ago to a teacher and said, this is what I'm kind of passionate about. And then I started writing another draft. Like, I don't know how to end this draft. That's not why it's called No Endings. I'll get into that later.
Or maybe it is.
No, it's not. So I took those first few drafts and I sent them to one of my friends who's also a writer. And I said, can you help me take these elements here, these concepts, and help me do a decent short film with this? he liked my first draft more, and I agree. And then we took some similar elements from draft two. We weaved some of those into this new draft, and together we wrote back and forth. And then we came to the film that I made, pretty much, which is a short thriller about a young woman named Randy. Randy Callahan lives her life on the run. There's a group called the Reapers who will stop at nothing to get her and a thing that is in her possession. And that's the gist of the story. And I think it worked really well. I'm really proud of what we created. I'm really proud of the cast and the crew and how hard we worked. But of course, shit happens on set all the time. So nothing ever goes fully as planned. Literally ever. Do you agree, Josh?
Yep. Yep.
And I was working on a bit more ambitious film than Josh was in terms of scale.
Yep.
So, his was one day, two rooms. That's it. Pretty chill. Mine was, I had to have weapons on set in the woods mostly, or in a cabin. We were running around in the woods. We had different outfits changing. We had flashbacks. We had prosthetics. We had a lot of stuff. We had fake blood going on.
There was quite a bit.
Yeah. And so, like, from a production standpoint, it was hard to do. That's why I raised over $1,000 to make the film. And we did. And it helped a lot. I ran an Indiegogo campaign to crowdfund for the film. We raised a decent chunk of change that we could not make the film with without it. And I'm so grateful to everyone about that. And my producer and I are about to make thank you videos for the people who donated $100 or more who bought that video. And thank you if you did help in the process for crowdfunding the film at all. Thank you so much. So, it was cold outside. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. It was cold outside.
What?
Our lead actress, fantastic performance. So good. But she was very cold. I wrote in the script for her to have a jacket because I knew it would be cold outside. It didn't help. Or we had problems like two actors got COVID so couldn't come to set. So we had fewer of extras that we were going to have originally that would have enhanced the film. But it turned out fine otherwise. And filmmaking is always making the same film three times, but differently. You make a film in pre-production, you make a different film in production, and you make a different film in post-production. It's always changing.
Yep.
It's really fun working with that idea. We changed some structural things in the edit, and I think it helped a lot. And that's going to consistently happen, I think. We had to just get the casting perfect for the main lead, Randy. Because otherwise this would all fall apart.
Yep.
This person had to convey pure panic and pain and this past trauma and experience that's not seen on screen, but you can feel it in her performance. That's so desperately needed in this role. And she brought it. And we had two full days, 2 5-hour days of auditions. And my producer and I were tired. And then we had, again, 4 hours of callbacks. So we had four actors for the lead, Randy, coming in, and two actors for another man named Silas as like one of the characters. And we had those two actors read with each of the other Randys and see how that goes. So I think this is my first time having a very full scale audition process. We had people coming in from Facebook groups, from the listserv at school, or from backstage. And I'm glad we had all those outlets because we would not have cast this otherwise. Overall, I would say do not make a short film that you don't think you can do, especially for a senior film. Don't be too ambitious.
Yes, yes. There are ideas you may have where it could be like a superhero film or a big fantasy type of film or like big sci-fi film, things that could, you know, require way more work than you think that they do. And you either will not have the time to make it happen or the money to make it happen. Realistically, you won't have both. And that's why I aimed for making mine way smaller and much more doable in terms of like money and time and other things like that. I was never planning on doing like a superhero film or things like that. I knew it would need to be smaller if I wanted it to work. And that's my advice I would give it for, at least idea-wise. If you've got an idea for like a big sci-fi, fantasy, whatnot, see what you can grab from that in terms of the concepts and see how you can make that doable with limited time and limited money.
Exactly. And both my films, Co-op and No Endings, had big sci-fi ideas in them that I boiled down to their essence and thought about how can I make this doable for 10 minutes? How can I make the scale of the story work in a small scale? How can I take these intense action sequences that I had originally planned or intense like sets and locations and boil them down to what I absolutely need to make the story work, and I did, and therefore I could actually shoot it. if I kept some of the original script stuff I was going to do, I couldn't have done this film. And I kept thinking about that. There was stuff in our quote-unquote final draft of the script, like the shooting script, that we changed about 2 weeks beforehand. Because I'm like, I can't get these materials. We're going to have rabbits in a cage that we changed to tracks on the ground. And it worked just fine. It just changed some dialogue.
Yep.
I think it's like a constant thing is always make it a good, solid story. Then you can always edit it and tweak it and make it doable based on your own resources.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. No endings will be released publicly at some point. But you can, if you want to know when my film will be released, you can follow it on social media at No Endings Film on Twitter and Instagram. And Josh, you have an Instagram for Just Breathe, right?
I do, which I have yet to post anything because after the festival, when I came back home, for some reason, Instagram just did not want to work for several weeks. I don't know why, but eventually I'll start posting on there again. It is JustBreathe_film, I'm pretty sure.
Nice. I think it's important to keep putting stuff out there and keep working on your art because, as our friend Bueller always says, give yourself permission to make something bad. Understand that what you put out there, give it your all, make it good, make it as good as you can do it, but be okay if it's not perfect, because it's going to be not perfect, especially for your first few things you're making. Your first 20 things might not be amazing, but you keep learning from it and keep building on it, and I think it's a very important thing to do. I don't think I couldn't have made this 4 years ago, I know that for a fact, when I was first in film school. I couldn't have made a lot of what I've done. I've learned a lot, and a big part of that is due to who was around me. My amazing crew I worked with Kate Kincaid as my producer, who produced Josh's film Tickets, Please. She's phenomenal. They are amazing to work with. My amazing DP, Sean Malungian, was an amazing cinematographer. I'm glad he and I discussed a lot of the visual style, a lot of the ideas, and what I was going for beforehand, and made sure it was very concrete. And also open to change on set, because we worked in a small cabin with limited lighting and space. Which I'll let Josh touch on a little bit since he was my gaffer on my film.
I was so mad on set when you showed me the cabin that we were going to be filming a lot of the stuff. And I was just like, there are so many windows here and almost all of this is at nighttime. Why are you doing this to me? So we had to go and buy a ton of trash bags and just tape those all around everywhere to make it as pitch black as we possibly could. It took 2 hours to tape everything up. It was so much, but it worked out in the end, and it was a good cabin to use.
Yeah, it worked out really well because you made it look like daytime, like nighttime during the day perfectly. The way the schedule worked, we had to shoot nighttime scenes during the day because of timing-wise.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't be there too long at night because it was in a public park when we filmed. We had a permit for everything. We had it blocked off. We had law enforcement at the park, knew what was happening, knew we had fake weapons, and everything was well-informed and well-organized. And they were amazing park rangers to work with. They were all very kind.
Which yes.
I'm very happy about, because that could have been a pain too. Also, you got that stuff done while we were shooting other scenes in the woods. And so timeline-wise, it helped to save a lot of time.
Yes. It was the only time I was frustrated with myself as a gaffer was when we were filming the nightmare scenes, because the lights that we had didn't really have that big of a color spectrum, and the way that they were, you couldn't really put gels and make it brightly be a blue or a green or whatever. So on set, I was trying my best to make it look as different. I was just like, I think it's fine. We're going to go with that. And thankfully, your editor, Nathan Ridings, did a better job than I did on making it weird colors.
He was our colors as well. He wasn't just editor. He also colorized. We worked a lot on, for lack of a better term, fucking up that nightmare. We cut it apart. We chopped it up. We pushed things around. And we made it feel jarring. And I think it worked. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And also we kept saying, what if we tweak this? What if we raise saturation more? Do it. Let's be bad. Let's try this. And it worked out really well. We said, what if we just abandon all rules and see what happens? And it turned out okay. But know when to break a rule in film. Don't do it willy-nilly.
And learn just the basic rules of film before you start filming, and don't break them just to be edgy. It's gonna end badly.
Yeah, one of Josh's first film he talked about a year ago was Super Ultra Mega Play the Movie, where there's some interesting continuity problems.
There are so many continuity problems. We break like the 180 rules so much. And that was because I didn't know about any of that stuff. Well, I knew about continuity, so I quote unquote wrote in a joke. It was me ad-libbing it on the day of just being like, oh, we're in different clothes now. Like, dude, you gotta hurry up this doesn't keep happening anymore. Just to try to, you know, cover myself for that.
We actually had also cool, amazing posters designed by our friend Michelle Pan. Michelle, you did an incredible job on both our posters.
Yes.
I'm very happy with them. And then No Innings poster looks fucking awesome. It looks like an intense short, which it was. I'm glad it comes across. And also, my friend Alex Ketch, who also was worked on both of our films, she composed the score for No Innings, that this film would not have felt any tension without her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would have felt like the visuals are still tense, but like music and sound do a whole lot for your film.
So much.
Never skimp out on music.
Please don't.
You can learn more about my film on IMDb. If you search up No Endings on IMDb, you'll find it. Or on Letterboxd. It's on both those sites. What is something that you took away, like looking back from your first film to this?
Oh, God.
What are you glad that you've learned or changed? The biggest thing that you've grown from?
Oh, God. So much. Because as I've said before, that film was a disaster when you go back and rewatch it. It was so much fun making it, but we had a script. I didn't use it. I didn't plan out any shots. I didn't do anything really before. And it was just get there day of and be like, okay, what are we going to do today? That was the mentality. So the mentality has definitely changed to being actually planning things out beforehand and figuring out really script what, just basically kind of everything, essentially. Like, while film school, you know, can't always be questionable, like, did I really need to do this or did I not? I would definitely not have grown as much as a filmmaker as I did without film school. If film is your passion, go to film school if you can, if you're able to afford it.
Join Facebook groups in your community if you want to be a filmmaker. Join as many as you can. Apply to be a production assistant or a PA on any job you can. Eventually someone will say yes. And then you can be on an actual professional set and learn in the lowest level, entry-level position and ask as many questions as possible. And you will learn a ton. I learned a lot freshman, sophomore year by just being lower level positions on set and just asking questions or watching the process.
Yeah.
It was very helpful doing that.
The more sets you're on, no matter what position, the more you will learn, whether it be in the department that you're in or even if you're just like watching and seeing what other people are doing. Because when I was on a set as a grip, I never gripped before, and I asked for, you know, help on how to do stuff, and I learned a lot. And the guy that was the gaffer, I'm dying. I worked very close with him. I learned a lot from him, but I also learned a lot, you know, just watching and seeing how the director directed and why she planned certain shots and why she did what she did. Right. You really do learn a lot no matter what position that you're in.
So if you're interested in filmmaking at all, go for it. You have a phone, make a short, make a micro short, make a 2-minute short. You have a computer, go to Celtics.com, CELTX.com, and write a dumb, fun screenplay. Write anything.
Get to the mental place of understanding, if you've never made films before, no matter what you make for your first time, it will be bad, and that is perfectly fine, because you will not be the next Spielberg by not making anything. You've got to make something and improve from there, because I can guarantee you that the first films that, like, Spielberg made, Coppola, all those big directors, the very first things that they ever made were most likely not good, but they learned and they improved from what they did. And that's what we've done from our first films. They're not the best.
No.
I'm saying they're really not.
Just because we graduated film school does not mean we graduated from film life, like filmmaking. We're going to continue this journey of learning every goddamn day. And that's kind of the fun of it. It's, you never stop learning from film sets.
As a filmmaker, if you're either not learning from your last film or don't find some flaw in what you did on your most current film, then you're doing something wrong. I'm not saying that you should hate your films when you make them, but I'm saying that you should be thinking critically of your own work and being like, I could have done that better. Overall, I like it, but I think that like one element I could have done differently. But you don't ever know that until afterwards, anyways.
Make things. Make bad shit. Make great shit. Make shit. Like, bad, amazing, whatever, throw it in the world and just accept it for what it is. And then just take what you made and learn from it. Put it out there. Get feedback. Get those one-star reviews. Learn what they said that it actually had merit. And learn from it. It's all important to learn. Any film is a miracle. The worst film in the world that happened at all is a miracle.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I don't like The Last Airbender, the fact that a film like that even got that far with that many sets and costumes and every part of it coming together, even at all, is impressive that it happened. Any bad film is still impressive that it got made. So,
yeah.
I'm happy for our journey here. And with that, it brings us, Josh, to a segment called Super Weird Stories. You ready for it?
I guess.
Are they weird? Are they super?
There's something in between, I'm pretty sure.
Super weird stories. So we actually recorded two recently that didn't make it to the show. we talked about two episodes ago, Gore the God Butcher, when our friend Sinjin was on.
Yeah.
That didn't make it in the cut. It was a bit too long for the podcast. And I gave a minute of a mini recap on his character last episode anyway, in the news about Thor Love and Thunder. So last episode we recorded an extra bit about a character, the irredeemable Ant-Man. And he's not a great guy. Not important. Which we might touch on again in the future at some point, just to talk about him, because he's a dipshit, as Josh now knows.
Uh-huh.
But the sound quality was unfixable, which is bad. I had an issue with it, and I couldn't fix it, so it wasn't usable. That's why the end bit of last episode, I used as little as possible for our, like, sign out goodbye. If you want to reach the show and talk to us and have us answer your specific questions or whatever, email us at podgeekspeak@gmail.com or tweet at us at #geekspeakpod. Or the Twitter account, GeekSpeakPod. We're there. Yeah. We'll respond to you either in the email or the tweet, or respond to you on the show regardless. I'd love to talk to you about your comments, questions, and the concerns. But instead of the DCOM for the week, which we're still going to watch and talk about next time, we're not like skipping it, I decided to give you two super weird stories in place of the past ones to help balance it out a little bit. Sound good to you, Josh?
Sure.
Yeah, awesome. I'm bringing out something I used to bring out called it was a book called The League of Regrettable Superheroes. I used to bring it out a few times, talk about characters like Dr. Vampire and other weird characters who are one-offs. But today, let's first talk about Funny Man, Josh.
I don't know who that is.
Are you a little bit nervous here at this character, based on our track record of characters?
I never know what to expect anymore, so just go for it.
Before I get into that, Josh, what is a super weird story? What is this topic about, this subject?
I don't know nothing about comics, and so this man here forces me to listen to some weird story every week, and it can range from being nice to being blackface.
You're not wrong. And I'm never treating these things as good things. I am the reporter. I am the messenger of these things. I am letting the audience, and Josh specifically, understand comics are weird.
They really are.
So Funny Man, want to know the first quote from him?
Sure.
Funny Man, the quote is, "I like the idea of cleaning up on wrong guys with jabs and gags."
What?
What? So when do you think Funny Man as a character debuted?
Probably like the 40s.
Yes.
Haha.
In Funny Man number one from Magazine Enterprises, January 1948.
That's old.
It is. Guess how much it cost to buy the comic?
10 cents.
Yes.
Haha.
You're on a roll right now for your guessing games.
Wonderful. So, what do I win?
The unfortunate knowledge of the character. So,
oh, man.
Do the names Jerry Siegel and Joel Shuster ring a bell to you? They should.
They're the guys that made Superman, right?
They are.
Aha.
They also made Funny Man.
Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I just think it's funny because they went from Superman to this. The Queen of Superman present their new hero, Funny Man. Let's get into it, shall we?
Sure. Why not?
Jerry Siegel and Joel Shuster are best known for creating Superman, and with him spawning the entire genre of superheroes. Although the Man of Steel was their most popular creation, he wasn't Siegel and Shuster's first collaboration, and neither was he their last. That honor goes to Funny Man. This was the last thing they ever made together.
What a way to go out on a high note.
I know, right? I'm going to describe him to you first. Ready?
Sure.
He has a long, pointed nose that's a bit round at the end. Kind of like a clown. He has hair that it's like blonde, but looks like Archie. Okay? Archie's hair. He wears white clown shoes. He wears parachute pants. And with yellow polka dots. Giant yellow polka dots. following so far?
Fun, I guess.
Rubbery yellow gloves. He has a vest, I want to say, with two looking three-dimensional giant buttons that are yellow popping off of the vest. A red bow tie and a tuxedo jacket that is blue with a plaid-like pattern.
Okay.
He also has a giant fist shooting out of his chest. With a boxing glove at the end.
Oh.
Thoughts on that?
That definitely sounds like it's from the 40s.
Is it more fun in your head than it would be to see a picture?
I don't know.
By 1948, Superman-related licensing had made a fortune for his publisher, and Superman's creators felt undercompensated, which they definitely were, by the way. With a lawsuit pending against their employer, Siegel and Schuster were forced to temporarily look elsewhere for paying work. Approaching Magazine Enterprises publisher Vincent Sullivan, who, as an editor with The National, had been responsible for purchasing the first published Superman story, Siegel and Schuster decided to try a slightly different direction with their new hero.
Well, they certainly did go in a direction. I just don't know what direction that really was.
Superman had always contained comical elements, like the impish Mr. Mixis Pedelec, who I want to do a whole Superman story on eventually, because Mr. Mixis Pedelec is an interdimensional imp.
You're saying words right now.
Guess how Mixis Pedelec is spelled?
I have no idea. I barely registering that you're speaking English right now.
M-X-Y-Z-T-P-L-K.
Okay.
There's no vowels, only consonants.
Cool.
He's like a villainous prankster. Anyway, and he's created many other comical elements involving Superman's lore, so it made sense to go in an even more comical direction, naturally.
Naturally, Funny Man, of course.
Funny Man put comedy on par with crime fighting. Why else would you? Armed with an arsenal of classic gags, from hand buzzers to squirting flowers, and disguised by a putty nose, the Daffy Daredevil was secretly Larry Davis.
You're about to say Larry David.
A popular television comedian. In the early days of the medium, with a yen for acting out in public. So, Larry Davis, not Larry David, of course. Larry Davis was a TV guy in the early days of TV who liked being outlandish in public, who went by the Daffy Daredevil Funny Man. Which, the Daffy Daredevil seems like a cool name already. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Davis's manager, agent, and occasional love interest, June Farrell, arranged a publicity stunt wherein Davis, in the costume he'd soon wear as Funny Man, would foil a staged crime. Okay, this can only go poorly. Crossed wires led Davis to confronting and defeating a real-life criminal, and at that moment, the comedian is hooked on do-gooding. Of course, he gets a high from it.
Of course, naturally.
Unlike Lois Lane in the Superman books, June was fully aware of Larry's dual identity. And she hated it.
I wonder why.
Preferring to keep the comedian performing in venues with a chance of a payday. Smart, because he's also the agent and manager, so gotta keep the payroll. Meanwhile, Funny Man patterned out his prop department with an eye toward even more efficient and absurd crook catching. It's very alliterative. Now, not only was he well outfitted with a portable armory of practical jokes, he bolted around town on his gadget-loaded trick cycle. He also invented a flying jet jalopy. That's not clear what it is, it never says. And even maintained a massive Funny Manor, each room packed with crook-nabbing traps. Thoughts okay. So far?
Comedy of the 40s was very interesting.
Funny Man did not catch the public's imagination in the same way as a pair's earlier collaboration of Superman, very clearly. But this time around, Siegel and Schuster made sure to secure their intellectual property. Their names appear boldly not only on the first page of every story, but also on the cover of every issue, which was all but unheard of in those days. It's pretty unheard of now. Less permanent was the tagline that topped the masthead of the first issue, the creators of Superman present their new hero. DC objected to its trademark being used by the competition. Funny Man managed to eke out a half dozen comic books as 6 issues, oh my, and a brief run as a syndicated newspaper strip. Oh, that's so sad. But the character packed a lot into that brief existence. His rogues gallery included no shortage of villains, such as the gadget-happy Doc Gimmick, the elusive Jailbird Slippery Slim, the high-speed Laser, and his crime car. I love that. The sword-wielding Monsieur Chevel, Timido, the timid menace, Leapin' Lena, Nude Nick, No Good Nick. What?
Oh.
One of his villains is named Nude Nick No Good Nick.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
And many more villains. I love it. Funny
How did comics survive this era?
I don't know, but I love it. Oh, Funny Man even had to contend with a couple of hecklers. Comic Man and Laugh Man, copycat superheroes, looking to steal the slap-happy hero's thunder. The collapse of Funny Man coincided roughly with Siegel and Schuster's court case, which was resolved in favor of Superman's longtime publisher. It's possible that even if their new character had caught on, neither creator would have felt the high spirit necessary to keep the collaboration going. And that is a story, in a nutshell, of Funny Man. Thoughts, Josh?
Well... you don't win them all.
Do you want to hear some from dialogue from the comic? Because there's a page of the comic here.
I guess I'll hear some. I mean, it's going to be 40s dialogue, so there'll be something good.
We got two villains fighting Funny Man. Ready?
Okay.
In this first panel is a woman or someone tied to the tracks of a railroad. So Funny Man's going to about to dive in and try and save them. The villains go, "Gonna rope you in. Taste pie." And they throw a pie in a rope. And then he says, "Hey, what's the idea?" Just like that.
All right, then.
Quality writing.
Sure.
And then Funny Man goes on and talking to them, saying, "Who are you? What are you?" "Me? I'm Laugh Man. Ho, ho, ho. Crooks captured with comic capers is my motto. And I'm Comic Man. When I titter, Tuffy's quail."
Oh, my.
Those are the copycats. Remember, Josh, from the other part?
I know. I'm just saying about his use of titter.
It's a new word to use. When I titter, Tuffy is quail. I like the alliteration. So that is today's first of two super weird stories.
That was definitely that.
And then on to the second one. Let's talk about Kid Eternity.
I'm not familiar.
Kid Eternity, his quote was, "Eternity!"
It's like Spider-Man's catchphrase being Spider!
Yep. Created by Otto Binder and Sheldon Moldoff.
I don't know who they are. These
seem like fake names. He debuted in Hit Comics number 25 under Quality Comics, December in 1942. More 40s, what a time.
Yep.
His outfit. Do you want to know what it is?
Sure.
A turtleneck sweater, pants, and a sash on his belt. It's really lame. It's a plain white long sleeve sweater with a turtleneck, gray long pants, a red belt. That's it.
Wow. So, wow.
Also, 10 cents. Few superheroes gain their powers as a result of a clerical error. But then there's Kid Eternity. While still a boy, Kid, his real name is never revealed, becomes a victim of Nazi aggression.
It was the 40s.
A bit different than Funny Man. When a U-boat sinks his grandfather's ship, heavy with its cargo of rubber and crude oil, taking with it all hands. Oh my god. Their bodies are recovered by a patrolling American destroyer, but the next time we see the kid and his grandpa, they're among the Elysian fields of eternity. This already seems way cooler than Funny Man was.
Yes.
So, is he dead? We'll find out what that means.
I'm going to say maybe.
Concerning Grandpa and the rest of the crew, there's no problem. What kind of sentence is that? In the Fatalastic universe of Kid Eternity, The dates and methods of every human death are preordained. So the recently snuffed sailors were expected. That's cool. Not the kid, though. Thanks to a celestial bookkeeping error, like in movie Soul, kind of, the first in 2 million years, the kid passed away before his time. That's kind of a lot like Soul and some of the ideas there. I like that.
Yeah.
The count was off. He wasn't scheduled to shuffle off the mortal coil for another 75 years. That's some fun wording. Shuffle off the mortal coil.
Shuffle the mortal coil.
It's disheartening to imagine that bureaucratic error persists in the afterlife, but at least the powers that be make it up to the kid in spades. First, they return him to his human body. No mean feat, considering he has to be recovered from burial at sea. Yeah, that's kind of intense.
Yeah.
It does not end there. The kid is granted tremendous supernatural powers. With a shout of his magic word, Eternity! He can switch between his mortal and ghostly forms, perform feats of pure magic, and summon the greatest figures of history, myth, and fiction to his beck and call. Fiction? You can make up people? That's a cool power! Okay, this guy's really cool. I actually like him. I rarely like these characters I talk about. Just saying. Guiding the underage superhero in his mission against crime is Mr. Keeper, the portly desk jockey whose error resulted in the kid's unscheduled kicking the bucket. It's good he's trying to make it up to him. That's good. He gave him powers and go back to the living world. All good things. Together, the pair proved popular enough to score the kid a title of his own, in addition to his appearances in hit comics. Over the course of his solo run, the kid's powers narrow in scope. His magic word originally gave him nearly limitless abilities, but eventually, his power set was limited to transitioning between mortal and ghost, and summoning of notable shades, including fictional ones. That's still a really cool power to me. Just summoning fictional people. Come on, Sherlock Holmes! That's a cool power!
You could, oh my god, the powers that you could have of just summoning, like, someone that could just snap the world away.
Imagine that power now existing. Like, I'm gonna summon all of Star Wars.
That'd be so cool.
Right? That's like a Ready Player One and Free Guy had a superhero, like, kid together.
Yeah.
Still, the latter ability served him well. And when he was in a jam, Kid Eternity summoned everyone from Paul Bunyan and Hercules to Newt Rockne and Robin Hood. Unexpected choices include Prohibitionist Carrie Nation, always an asset when you have to throw down in a gang of hoodlums, and fellow Quality Comics character Blackhawk. Kid Eternity's opposite arrival was Master Man, a reformed school thug who could summon the most evil figures in myth and history by hollering his own magic word, Stygia. It's not as fun as Eternity.
No.
Apparently, the infernal alternative to this cosmology is Divine Eternity. Okay, so it's like a reverse, like, kind of hellish place, I guess. Among Kid Eternity's more dangerous foes, like the Sinister Callie or the Wrenched Dr. Pain, was a pair of lady con artists called Her Highness and Silk, who became so popular that they graduated to a feature of their own. By the early 1950s, Kid Eternity's popularity faded, bringing him, or at least his book, the death he'd evaded for years. That's really sad.
Damn.
Although he's been resilient enough to survive a few revivals since, none of Kid's reappearances have earned him superstardom. If Kid Eternity wants a second life as an A-list hero, he'd better hurry up. His 75-year reprieve is almost over. Wow. That's actually pretty cool.
Having the power to bring anything, like any kind of fictional character, like into your world, that's so cool.
Like, it's one thing if it's just anyone who died, bring them back to fight or whatever, that's different. But anyone in all of fiction? Wow. I love that.
I would love, in like, having a kid have that power, like you, that'd be so cool.
Also, his origin of you weren't supposed to die yet is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Make it up to you. Anyway, that's our episode pretty much, guys. Thank you all so much for listening. It means the world to us. If you can give us on Spotify that follow, that 5-star rating, on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, give us the 5-star ratings. Leave some positive reviews. It helps us out a lot. You also can subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/GeekSpeakPodcast, I think. Go check us out. It would mean the world to us if you helped us build our brand more and help out the show. And with any comments or questions, email us at podgeekspeak, GeekSpeak, @gmail.com. Or again, tweet at us at GeekSpeakPod or #GeekSpeakPod. We are more than happy to answer all of your quandaries.
Yes.
Josh, where can people find you online?
Go to Instagram at j_rudy16.
Do it, everyone. Go there right now. Do it. Sorry. Yes. Go on.
YouTube, Josh Rudolph. Twitter, j_rudy28. TikTok, rudy_thefilmnerd.
Are you going to upload any more content soon on TikTok or YouTube?
I'm hoping to with YouTube soon, once I can actually get some free time and sit myself down and do it. Yes. And then TikTok, also, yes, I just need to figure that out.
You need to have thoughts and ideas again.
Exactly, which is difficult.
Anyway, you guys can find me on the internet. I'm on Letterboxd at That Theater Nerd, I think. You can just search up Sean Williams and find me. Both my crew profile for Co-op and No Endings, like as a director, and you also can find me on there as a user, have my own Letterboxd page. You also can find me on TikTok at That Nerd Theater and on Instagram at That Nerd Theater. And by the time this is out, look up on YouTube Co-op 22 short film, 2022 film. It'll be on the Liquid Canvas Productions YouTube channel. Yeah, this is our show. Thank you so much for listening. Oh, and I'm on Twitter at The Theater Nerd. Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. It's been a great time, and we're glad to be back in a consistent way. Woo!
Yeah, the stars are bright, man. They're just there, vibing. That's about the best my brain can do right now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.